This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from WRKF, where we originate this show 5 days a week at 9 in the morning, and it's rerun at 9 in the evening, and the show takes place at the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Renee Martin and Robin Dow are producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Do want to wish a happy 100th birthday today to one of our most devoted listeners, Mildred Fine, who's at St. James Place, and thank you for being part of the family, and it's great to have listeners of all ages and from every political perspective, and we want to make sure that we are a place where we are as civil as we can be. As I mentioned yesterday, General Honoré would be our guest, and I was thinking of Jimmy Fitzmaurice, the former lieutenant governor, who said, it's okay to disagree, it's not okay to be disagreeable. So let's remember that as we move forward in these most interesting times. And General Honoré, if you'd like to talk with him, 877-217-5757, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
8 days since we had an election. What do you think?
We'll see. We'll see how the promises made during the rhetoric turn into policy.
And we're going to talk about that, but let's hit some state stuff first. Yeah. General Honoré leads the Green Army at the Capitol, and part of that has been a focus on tax breaks for industry, particularly Exxon and some other biggies. Is that on the table, or are we looking at other places to raise money if we cut income taxes?
Well, I'm concerned because the numbers don't work. I mean, I wasn't very strong in Louisiana public school system. Math wasn't my strong suit, but I did pretty good. I hired people that could count. And from what I'm seeing in the paper and the numbers presented to the legislature, that they're going to have an imbalanced book. In other words, we all understand if you spend more than you have, which they've been able to keep the books balanced, but when you reduce the amount of money coming in, and you don't have a solid plan to replace that, and then the replacement money lies on the burden of the people who go buy basic things, people that do basic services. It's counter to what I've heard the conservative parts of the legislature in this state talk for the last decade, to not overburden the people with tax. But the people they want to unburden with tax is the industry. The people that come, many of them foreign-owned companies or out-of-state-owned companies that are getting tax break, how are you going to replace that $500 million that could be coming to the state and even more if we didn't have the tax exemptions? And I don't know how they're going to balance the books other than I hope this isn't the strategy and that ends up being the burden of having to close more public schools. And I think that would come in the next year's legislature. We've heard the dirty rumors before, but if you can't support the schools, the public schools, then we change the whole makeup of the state. And that's a concern. And, you know, there's been talking about how many colleges we got. I think that's going to be their target, but because they can't balance the book by giving this amount of tax break. It won't work.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And this is an email from Tom on Bluebonnet about Cleo Fields winning his congressional seat. He'll be heading to Washington 28 years after he lost his seat in the newly configured 6th District. But Tom says, did you lose a key ally at the Capitol? Cleo often carried the water for the environmental issues.
We were going to miss him, particularly with the air monitoring, and he helped us with the trying to save the Southern Hill Aquifer. He was a champion. We always put up a good argument. We finally got a resolution last year to create a study resolution from Senator Fields that looking at air monitoring, but the second meeting they had at the Capitol, we had people there that reported they did not concentrate on putting air monitoring on the chemical plants. They spent much of their time talking about air monitoring bakeries mm-hmm. and laundries. So it's not a serious committee. And now that he's gone, I think we will certainly miss him, because the direction of the study resolution, which goes back to the legislature next time they meet, is filled with things that are not that serious people should not be talking about, bakeries and laundries, when we got Exxon, Dow, BSAF, and all the big mm-hmm. chemical plants here, and they spend their time talking about monitoring laundries.
Well, the latest calculations are that the Republicans will have a minimum of 219 U.S. House seats, and it takes 218 to have a majority in the House. So Republicans appear to be in place to have a majority in the House, the Senate, the president. They've got in Louisiana, they've got the governorship, all the statewide offices, both U.S. senators, all members of the houses, Senate and Louisiana House, answer to a Republican majority. They got the courts, and if Sid Edwards wins in Baton Rouge, they'll have the mayorship of East Baton Rouge Parish. Now, for those who like divided government, mm-hmm. we're not getting much of it right now. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think this is what happens in a democracy, and you got to like it when you win, and you got to like it, not necessarily like it when you lose, but you got to work harder. The challenge is now that you are the incumbents and you driving the bus. Let's see if you could keep it out of the ditch. It didn't work well the last time. We had cohesive government in Washington at a very tough time in our nation, and we're fighting COVID. So we all witnessed that, and they paid for it in subsequent elections. So now you got the keys to the bus. Let's see how you're going to drive this bad boy. Because we're not going anywhere. The people are going to still demand services. The people are still going to be watching. Are you going to cut the Social Security or to cut veterans' benefit? Are you going to protect the air and the water? You know, protecting the air and the water is not a casual woke concept. The warming ocean is having impact on fisheries. It's having impact inland on our ecosystem, and it's having an impact on our health from the air. So cutting those regulations to make it easier for businesses to produce more pollution, we'll see. You driving the bus. Let's see. This year, the ocean was the hottest it's ever been, and it's going to be hotter next year than it is this year. And we saw what happened with those two pop-up storms that hit Florida. So the global warming is an impact on the nation, and it impacts everybody. And we're going to have a lot of oceanfront property south of I-10 that we don't have now, because that's how the incoming president referred to global warming and rising sea level is going to create more oceanfront property. He's driving the bus. Let's see how this works out. But the people are going to have to speak up. We can't take it and not push mm-hmm. back on some of these radical concepts.
We're 8 days removed from the election of 2024, and the marquee election was for president of the United States. And, of course, that drove turnout, and a lot of people voted. Donald Trump's now above 75 million votes, and Kamala Harris is above 72. So on the all-time list, Trump has the second most votes of all time, only second to Biden. And Trump was third with his votes from 2020, and Harris is fourth. But she will likely be well inside 3 million votes, so she will not have lost as resoundingly to him in the overall vote as he did to Hillary Clinton, for example. But he is at 50.2% right now. Could be pushed down below because California still has 21% of its votes out, but 50.2, and she's at 48.1. He went from 46.1 to 46.8 to 50.2. So despite all his problems, General, Donald Trump picked up votes rather than lost them. How do you explain this phenomenon?
You know, I don't want to. I've heard so much crazy stuff coming from the pundits. You're supposed to clarify this for us. But I think the people voted, and they voted their conscience. And I'm disappointed in it, needless to say. But we'll see. I'm not going anywhere, and we're going to stand our ground, and we're going to try to push back. That's not a resounding majority in the Congress. The last time we saw this Congress with that number, they had a hard time putting things through. The way this president is coming back, he is setting the deck and putting some conditions in the Senate that would allow him to appoint people out of during recess. And he basically owns the House. So our government was set up, the three equal branches of government, for a reason. And the more we look, we've got, there's no distinguishing line between what comes out of President-elect Trump's mouth and the Congress and the Senate to do any pushback.
877-217-5757. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and we welcome your input from the most enlightened audience in radio, 877-217-5757. I noted yesterday with Mary Stein that we quite possibly have the largest percentage of library card holders for any city in the country, any parish. We got 450,000 people in our parish or so, and about 250,000 library card holders, and we have the fourth largest Rotary Club in the world. And today, yours truly will be honored to speak. I've been there a few times before, as is General Honoré, always a great event at Drusilla. And I look forward to talking politics with some of the titans of our business world. And General, a listener notes, as we invite your participation also online at talklouisiana.org. This is Hal in Monroe, and I saw these same figures. This is unbelievable that the Democrats, meaning Harris, she got a majority of the people in this country earning over $100,000 a year to vote for her, and Trump got a majority of those earning under $30,000 a year. What has happened? Democrats are now becoming the party of fat cats, and Republicans are becoming the party of those who rely on social programs for assistance. What's going on, General?
Well, that's kind of a odd one to explain, because
it doesn't compute, does it?
It doesn't compute. It's I always said after Katrina, my experience, and I wrote a book about it and talked about it. There are three streets in America: Wall Street, Main Street, and Railroad Street. And it's obvious what goes on Wall Street. They get the tax break. Rich get richer, poor get. The middle ground, the Main Street, the business class, people that can afford a nice house and go on vacation. Then there's Railroad Street. That's where the people who rely on government assistance because of disability, because they're poor, they can't work, or they're out of work, or they're injured, or they're elderly, is what I describe at Railroad Street. In some places, you can go to that city, and the whole city changes as you cross Railroad Street. It's the home of the poor and the disadvantaged. And as you described that, they voted in high numbers for President-elect Trump. I think much of it, as articulated, the understanding of it, that the price of things had a major impact on people. I do believe that. The prices in the grocery store, the prices for gas, all that had a major impact. Because Wall Street, Main Street, they're doing good. The stocks are up. The interest is coming down. The employment is good. But I think it was a reflection on the incumbent, that when poor people saw people talking about paying back college loans. The people on Railroad Street, they don't put that burden on the country. What about the people that go out and go to a trade school? They got to pay for that. But we're talking about as a nation, and I don't totally disagree with it. I disagree how the Congress set up the student loan program, where it's a compounding interest, and it should have been a free student loan or nearly free student loan, whereas now that student loan constantly grew. Congress could have fixed that.
All right.
And if they had fixed that legislation when they had the time, because a lot of people took issues with that, and I think the poor people on Railroad Street pushed back on that.
Okay, 877-217-5757-4. General Russell Honore, 37 years U.S. Army, and belated Veterans Day acknowledgments to one of the great patriots in our world, David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for your service, General. General, there's an article in the New York Times today that the new Congress, the Republican Congress, is expected to reverse the fines and penalties the Biden administration placed on energy companies releasing methane from storage tanks and pipelines, which is a super greenhouse gas. On a scale of 1 to 10, how damaging would that be to climate change?
All right.
That'd be very damaging. Methane is the most dangerous of the greenhouse gas. It holds the heat the most, and is causing untold damage. And we have more and more methane right here in Louisiana. We are the largest methane producer in the Western Hemisphere. We produce more than all of Europe because of the LNG plant, some of the large fertilizer plants. And methane is what's enhancing global warming, which is affecting the ice cap, that's causing sea levels to rise, that's causing storms overnight, over hours, to go from a Category 1 to a Category 5, as we saw off the coast of Florida and going through Florida and up into North Carolina and creating 10, 15 inches of rain because of the energy of this warm ocean water. That's the impact of global warming, and it's impacting our fishing. Our shrimpers are having to go and find shrimp in different places because of the impact of global warming and the impact it's having on our ecology.
All right.
So global warming is a reality, and methane is the major driver of global warming at this point in time.
Now, a story a few weeks ago about the greenhouse gases in Louisiana being in front of the pack nationally on that was no surprise, was it?
No, not a surprise. It's going to get worse because we've got the largest LNG plant in the nation, in Louisiana, about to open in Plaquemine Parish inside a flood zone. We're going to see how that works out.
All right, James in Metairie. James, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Good morning, General. Your opinion, I have a few things to say about what I found about this Defense Secretary designee. He said the Democrats were rooting for the virus to spread during in February 2020. He said that the variant of COVID-19 was made up by Democrats to help them in the 2022 midterm elections.
All right, some strong statements from some of these cabinet designees by the incoming president. Mike Huckabee, of course, has pounced on Palestinians, and now he's going to be ambassador to Israel, and James is talking about the defense secretary nominee. It's a case in which a lot of these people, not surprisingly, General, they have Trumpian tendencies.
Yeah, they have no filter. They will say anything to impress their leader. That's been dysfunctional on face value. If you look at this guy, it's a combat veteran, a former National Guard guy, well-educated. I hope he doesn't bring that rhetoric to the Pentagon.
All right.
And he's going to have to find his own way to walk that back, and he's going to have to get through the Senate nomination, because it's not that he's not a smart guy, but his rhetoric has overrun his skis, and now he's at the top of the most powerful military in the world, saying crazy stuff like that.
Charles in Acadiana. Good morning, Charles. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, thank you for taking this call. Hey, on the subject of workforce development that General Honore mentioned a moment ago, you know, currently our national debt to GDP is the same as what it was in 1946. In 1946, it's because we had 2 years of outlays for the GI Bill, which doubled the number of college graduates in 5 years, and was paid off entirely the GI Bill from the new receipts from these new taxpayers from the improved workforce. Currently, we're at the same place.
All right. Well, in overall numbers, we're not at the same place. We've got a $36 trillion debt. That's amazing. Now, during the war, we did run huge deficits, and Charles is correct, but I think in some cases, if we're comparing FDR to today, we're comparing apples and oranges, and you can bet the Republicans, now that they have the government, they're not going to do anything about the debt ceiling. That issue has gone completely off the table, General.
Absolutely. It's pretty interesting how we talk about debt based on who's in office and what we're spending money on.
And we're spending more on debt service than we are on defense, anything but Social Security.
Absolutely. And they've got the keys. We'll watch because the incumbency will pay in the next round of elections. But it's sad to see some of this rhetoric now becoming policy.
Right, back with more after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with General Russell Honoré, the leader of the Green Army and hero of Katrina, 37 years in the U.S. Army with experience in war zones. And we're talking about the world at large, near and far. And if you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757. Paul in Magnolia Woods. Paul, good morning. You're on.
Yeah, I just, this is Jim and General Honoré. I just wanted to thank you for having this conversation. It's a very welcome change from most of what we're hearing. And General Honoré has great credentials to make the case for improving our environment rather than reducing the quality of our air and water.
Thank you, Paul. It's always nice to get encouraging words.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate Paul. Another listener notes that when President Trump in 2017 got his tax plan through, the debt was at $21 trillion, and he said the surpluses were going to be so vast that we were going to wipe the debt away. Well, 7 years later, we're at $36 trillion in debt. This supply-side economics, it's nice to think it's going to work, but it really doesn't. It just increases deficits in the debt. And a listener asked about tariffs and whether that'll do exactly the same thing. Are you a tariffs guy? What do you make of the incoming president's call for sweeping tariffs?
Yeah, I all the experts say that this is not an area I have a lot of experience in other than the lived experience that we pay for the tariffs.
And Louisiana, with our port system, will be affected dramatically.
Yeah, and it reduced, the last time you put the tariffs in, our income at our ports went down 20%. It's going to have a significant impact on Louisiana. And it caused the world to go to Brazil for corn because those tariffs didn't work, and then we had to pay the farmers back for all the crops that didn't sell, or they had to sell at a lower price because of the tariffs. So it's a regressive process, just like the process we're doing at the Capitol now. It sounds good, and it sounds aggressive, and it sounds right. We're going to get the rest of the world, but our economy only lives on our ability to export things. 43% of our exports leave the port out of the port of Louisiana in terms of tonnage. 43%, and we
of all U.S.
All U.S. port export by tonnage go through the port of Louisiana. This could have a devastating impact over the next 4 years. These tariffs on what people pay for that product that they're holding in their hand, from the iPhone to the TV they're looking at to the washing machine. Well, and it did not get the impact of bringing that production to the U.S. We just paid more, and we'll pay more. It's not a punitive effect against the country that's making it, like China. It's because the American people end up paying for the tariff. It sounds good in the soundbite, but there's nothing there.
Beverly and Zachary. Beverly, please be concise. You're on with the General.
Yes. Oh, General, it's such a blessing to hear your voice today. I just coincidentally happened to get in the car, and then you were there. And there's two things I'd like you to comment on that I've been frustrated about regarding the election, and it's about the pundits, and I heard you just mention something about them just a moment ago. Here's the thing. They're doing this wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, analysis.
All right, what's your question, Beverly? Please.
My question is, they are, when they looking at the poll numbers, they're looking at who didn't vote for Vice President Harris, but they're not evaluating who did vote for her.
All right.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. If President Harris had won, this was going to be an uphill walk because of the things she had said she was going to do for the people. Very direct lines that people could relate to, whether you agree with it or not. This new elected president, we're going to have to still climb that mountain because with the issues that are coming up with taxes, the issues that are coming up with inward movement of the United States, withdrawing from the world engagement and what we put into NATO and support for Ukraine, and support for what's going on in Israel and Gaza, that hill is still there. But we're going to have to negotiate it as the opposition to this, walking backwards blindfolded. Because the opposition with the party in power having the White House and having the House, the Senate, and having all the influence they want at the Supreme Court, the people are going to have to push back, but we're going to have to do it climbing this hill, walking back with blindfolded, right, because this information operation they're going to use is going to tear the country apart.
All right. As we segue to Attorney Mike Wolf on the decision yesterday in federal court from Judge Don D. Gravel about the Ten Commandments, Father Sam Maranto says, Since President-elect Trump, the Supreme Court, and Republican lawmakers have de facto set aside the Constitution and substituted religion in its place, should all above swear allegiance to the Ten Commandments and not the Constitution? That's a bit of a rhetorical question from Father Sam, but thank you, sir. And this is serious business. What do you make of this? And are we getting sidetracked from issues that may be a bit more important than whether or not we have the Ten Commandments public?
I think this is a basic culture war. We got three wives, five children from three different wives, two of them from overseas. I think this is a distraction here in Louisiana. it has very little to do with the quality of education. And this is for public schools. It's not a mandate for private schools. It's a mandate for public schools, and it's a way to say this is going to make things better. Is it making things better at the Capitol? Do they have the Ten Commandments on every one of their seats down there and in all of their rooms in the Capitol? It doesn't make sense. I mean, we've been through this discussion before, the separation of church and state, and what's next is going to be painted on all the football chairs at LSU and at Southern, and the Ten Commandments going to make us better? We'll see.
Thank you, General. Always an honor. Appreciate you. Let's keep it going.
Hang in there, America.
Mike Wolf stepping to the microphone. Need to get closer, Mike. And yesterday, as noted, Louisiana's new laws, Patrick Wall writes above the fold in today's Advocate and Picayune, requiring public schools to display the Ten Commandments is unconstitutional and cannot be enforced, according to federal judge John D. Gravel of the Middle District here in Baton Rouge. The law requires the posting of the religious text in every classroom by January 1st, so this obviously has been put on hold, but it may go all the way to the Supreme Court. But for people like you, Mike Wolf, libertarian that you are, you didn't like this law. What do you make of it now that a judge, a learned man like Judge D. Gravel, has shut it down?
Well, I'm very, very pleased, and I'm very grateful to Judge D. Gravel and also to the ACLU and the plaintiffs in the case for bringing this litigation and handling it so well. Yeah, I've been reading the decisions, 177 pages long. I haven't got through it all, but he gives the basic outlines in a summary at the very beginning, and it's clear that this law passed by the legislature this year, House Bill 71, is unconstitutional in that it violates both the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. Of course, the Establishment Clause says the state cannot support any particular religion or try to establish a religion, and the Free Exercise Clause says that individuals must have the freedom to practice their religion as they see fit. And on both principles were violated by this law, the judge had no difficulty finding. And this is just a preliminary injunction, but to issue it, he has to say that the plaintiffs or the parties getting the injunction are likely to succeed on the merits. So they're going to probably win, and it just appears that it's the case will certainly be won in the district court, and then it will go to the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans.
All right. Robin says, a listener, I think this is Gustavo, says that this guy, the judge, not this guy, the judge, the learned judge, was appointed by President Obama. So what? No surprise. What do you make of the fact that politics might be at play here?
Well, this is just ridiculous. Anybody in the Baton Rouge Bar, the Louisiana Bar, knows that John DeGravel was an excellent lawyer and that he's an excellent judge as well. I attended the oral argument in this case, and reading this decision, it's a textbook example of an excellently written decision, and I commend it to all lawyers or people interested in the law students. You get a great education just reading the judge's decision, and he'll show you ideally how to present a case of constitutional law, analyzing properly and fairly all of the arguments being made, and shows basically that the constitutional law demands the conclusion he gave.
Well, this could go through some more steps before it's determined. It could go to the Supreme Court, Mike, and I would I would say based on some other decisions, Judge DeGravel might have his decision overturned by a higher court.
Yeah, but he probably won't. Stone versus Graham was the 1980 Kentucky case that was on all fours. Excuse me, as we say, it was an identical case. And then in a couple of years ago, the Kennedy versus Bremerton case from Washington State involving football players and a coach leading prayers after games. In that case, the court...
Where you're relying on precedent, and of course, yes. When they were confirmed, both Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh said there was precedent to keep Roe v. Wade, and then they threw it out.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the judge has analyzed it under both the new jurisprudence, the Bremerton case, and also under the Stone v. Graham traditional jurisprudence, and on either basis, this has to be held unconstitutional. The state can't go around dictating religious beliefs or favoring one set of beliefs over another.
Says Mike Wolf.
And John DeGravel.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more with Mike, and your number is 877-217-5757. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and in a few moments we'll hear from Dr. Elizabeth Sutton, the Scientific Research Director at Women's Hospital, but we're finishing up with Mike Wolf, and he is encouraged by a decision from Judge John G. Gravel, the judge presiding in the Middle District in the Ten Commandments case, and he has thrown it out, but this is going to go to, I guess, the Fifth Circuit, right? And then presumably to the Supreme Court. And a listener makes a good point, although it was at state court, but Mary Olive Pearson, the late, great Mary Olive Pearson, won every round in her St. George case and then lost 4-3 at the state Supreme Court, and we got St. George. Really, all of this is just window dressing until it gets to the highest court in the land, Mike.
Yes, and they can change their jurisprudence, but they're not likely to change on this issue. It's just, it so plainly contradicts the previous rulings, and precedents are important. That's how our law is created, and you can't just disregard them in spite of the political preferences of some of the judges.
Well, we will follow this, and it's always good to hear from Mike Wolf, one of the most learned attorneys, in addition to being the godfather of the Libertarian Party. But he voted for Kamala Harris, I understand.
Yes, I did. I was one of the patriots who tried to support the
Constitution. You're one of the 15% of the white people in Louisiana who voted for her.
Only 15% of us?
15%,
That's pretty shameful.
Well, according to you. Now, if you're in the 85%, you might think of it a little differently. It's in the eye of the beholder. But Mike is quite a music aficionado, and last night he was all excited. He told me he was going to see Judy Collins, the Judy Blue Eyes, at the Jefferson Center for the Performing Arts, 85 years old and still doing it, and you show up with your beautiful wife, Leslie, and what happens?
Concert was canceled. Judy was ill.
And you drove all the way from Baton Rouge to New Orleans.
That's right.
To see Judy Collins. Well, hopefully she's okay.
Hope so. Hope so.
Well, thank you, Mike Wolf. And as mentioned, Dr. Elizabeth Sutton is with us. She is at Women's Hospital as the Scientific Research Director. It is the largest delivery hospital in Louisiana, one of the largest in the country. It's welcomed more than 385,000 babies since 1968. And she is involved in some major things at the hospital. Her research program focuses on improving women's long-term health by understanding the immediate and persistent effects of adverse pregnancy outcomes. She is director of the OBGYN Residency Research Program. Tell us where that program is right now in this new era. Dr. Sutton, good morning to you.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. Yeah, the LSU OBGYN residency program is thriving. They have an incredible program that LSU actually runs, but it's housed at Women's Hospital, and they serve a really high-risk and high-need population. They have 16 residents, and we run their research program for them, and they do incredible. They ask really great questions that support their clinical growth.
Well, this is something that you are on the cutting edge of, and you're involved in delivering babies and making women who deliver them happy and healthy. Have there been advances since you've been there that are pertinent?
Absolutely. We have a really strong research program that focuses not only on the individual, but also the community. So we have community programs where we add on doulas and community health workers to help support pregnancy, access to pregnancy care, and then help people postpartum as well. And then we have a research study that we're almost ready to close enrollment on that's called the SWEET study, that's trying to help women that are postpartum at risk for diabetes try to avoid diabetes. You mentioned the 385,000 births we've had since Women's is here. And a lot of our focus and our bread and butter is pregnancy, right, and having babies. But there's so much research that needs to be done on after you have the baby and how to support women after that and make sure they have good health as they grow up with their kids.
877-217-5757 is your number for Dr. Elizabeth Sutton of Women's Hospital. She is the Scientific Research Director and Director of the OBGYN Residency Research Program. You mentioned the SWEET study. Now, a lot of this involves Ozempic, doesn't it?
It does. I never thought I'd do a research study with such a well-recognized medication. This is taking Ozempic, which is used for treating type 2 diabetes, I think is how people know about Ozempic. But we're using it in a different way. We're trying to use it to prevent the progression to type 2 diabetes among women that are at really high risk and kind of on their way to diabetes. And so that's kind of the unique take for this research study.
And I'm told that the people who participate in this study must be between 18 and 45. Is that correct?
Yes. And they have to have had a baby in the last 10 years. And they also have had to have gestational diabetes. So that's really an important piece of this is a lot of times what happens in pregnancy, these medical complications or conditions you get in pregnancy, they will change your health for the rest of your life. Or your risk, I would say, for having a chronic disease later in life. And I find people don't know that. And so if you've had gestational diabetes, you're actually at a tenfold increased risk of getting type 2 diabetes for the rest of your life. But the interventions to help you prevent that are pretty shallow. And so this is what the study is trying to do, trying to build that toolbox to help women who are postpartum from gestational diabetes make sure that they don't progress to type 2 diabetes.
I see that 102 women will be chosen for the study, and also you cannot be currently pregnant to be a part of the study, I'm told. So, but for those who would like more information or perhaps to participate in the study, what's the best way to do it, Dr. Sutton?
Yeah, they can go to woman.org/research and just look for the SWEET study.
And you'll have to have a physical exam, right?
mm-hmm.
and pass some
and so you,
protocol.
So there's a screening visit that you'll come in and do. You have to have prediabetes to be in the study. But the newest data from the CDC shows that even though 1 in 3 adults in the United States actually have prediabetes, almost none of them know it. So we don't say only come in if you have prediabetes. We'll run all your labs for you at no cost to you. So you come in and you do a screening visit. We do your labs, we do your physical, and then we talk to you also about this medication, the side effects, the possible benefits, and the outcomes. And then if you want to enroll and you qualify, there are 5 study visits. So you'll come in and we'll do all your measurements at the beginning, and then you take your medicine, and then we do all those measurements again after that 6 months.
Well, November is National Diabetes Awareness Month, and a listener asked a good question. This is Holly in the Garden District. How do you determine if somebody is pre-diabetic?
That's a great question. So typically, you don't feel. So if you have type 2 diabetes or type 1 diabetes, you can feel not great. But pre-diabetes, you really can't tell a lot of times. So we do a test called an oral glucose tolerance test. And that is you drink a sugary drink, and then we measure your blood sugar at certain time points after that. And if your body isn't taking up that sugar, that glucose that you've just given it in the timely manner, then you can get diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And if it kind of is it, if it's not doing it well enough, but it's not bad enough to get type 2 diabetes, there's some numbers there for what your glucose would be in those timed blood draws, then that's what gets you diagnosed with pre-diabetes.
Another listener asked about A1C. That's the bellwether for some to determine this. What's the magic number?
Yes, that's a great question. So the numbers of your glucose that line up with that oral glucose tolerance test, they also line up with your HbA1c, which is a number that tells you about your blood sugar within about the last 3 months. So your prediabetes range is 5.7 to 6.4. And if you have 6.5 or higher, then your doctor will likely give you a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes.
And in this part of the world, I would say a lot of people are in that 5.7 to 6.5 range.
And they don't know it. You know, it's really fascinating the amount of women that we have come in and screen and say, I don't think this is me, but I heard about it and I know I have the history of gestational diabetes. Can I just get my blood drawn and my test run? And, you know, we have very few screen failures for not having the right HbA1c. So it's really important, even if you're not interested in the study, to follow up with your doctor and tell them about your pregnancy history, right? Your OBGYN knows, but if your primary care doctor maybe not isn't asking you those questions, you could be at risk for type 2 diabetes because of what happened in your pregnancies in the past. And so it's really a good idea to mention that to your doctor and ask them to run that HbA1c number.
And a listener asks, a good question, but I think I know the answer. Diabetes is also related to family history, isn't it?
Yes. And so I mentioned having a pregnancy with gestational diabetes is one of the strongest risk factors for having type 2 diabetes. Also on those risk factor lists is family history and your age and your BMI, which is your body mass index. Those are the top four.
What about diet? Like if you eat a lot of sweets, is that going to affect, or is that really not as big a deal as you might think?
That's a great question. It really isn't. It's really how your body handles it. So if your body has, if you're carrying extra fat mass, or if you have extra fat that gets deposited in your liver, right? And so your body isn't handling those macronutrients or that glucose as it comes in like it's supposed to, that's what really tips you into the diabetes diagnosis. However, if you have a really good pancreas, and you're not carrying extra weight, you have good lean muscle mass, if you eat a lot of sugar or glucose, your body usually can handle it and take it up pretty well.
And the listener, another one about the length of the study, if you participate, it's 9 months, isn't it? Isn't that the number?
Yeah.
9 months?
It is, from start to finish. So it's 8 months of medicine, but 9 months if you count like the beginning visits and that end of study visit. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Elizabeth Sutton, Women's Hospital. We look forward to visiting with her again back tomorrow. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.